We are back at it.
My responsibility is to make this place great again.
Champions of the Big 12.
This is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
Let her rip.
We are back at it. Oklahoma State football decidedly not back at it. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. This is the Pistols Firing podcast. And my goodness, what an epic disaster the Eric Morris era has turned out to be through one game. We got lots of people commenting already. Join in. It is time to commiserate. Colby seems inconsolable at the moment. Colby, are you all right, first off? I need a wellness check on you.
My screen's not frozen, Carson. I'm embarrassed to show my face. I mean, what? We got a lot of things to get to, obviously. Everyone should be embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. I'm sure you're embarrassed. Eric Morris should be embarrassed. Jaleel Johnson should be embarrassed. Drew Messemaker should be embarrassed. Caleb Hawkins should be embarrassed. Every offensive lineman not named Jacob Sexton should be embarrassed. Everyone should be embarrassed. I have so many thoughts. We'll get to all of them. If I start going, I'm not going to stop for 20 minutes. So you lead me. You lead me.
Embarrassing, I think, is the perfect word to sum up what was game one of the Eric Morris era. I don't have the Colby crash out music handy anymore. I may need to convert that to our new software here. But welcome everyone in. I think the best place to start here is, yeah, it was embarrassing. And let's just start with all the reasons why. I mean, first off, Colby, Oklahoma State scored more points last year against Tulsa than they did this year. They scored a whopping 12 last year, dwarfing this year's total. And for me, Colby, I guess just the perfect place to start is I thought the defense kept Oklahoma State in this game. They consistently, I think Tulsa converted their very first third down conversion of the entire game on the last drive of the game. And the story of this game was the epic face plant put on by the world's greatest offense, the offense that led the nation in points, yards passing, all of the reasons that you and I and everyone else was so bullish on this team coming into the year. And for me, that's just inexcusable to put up that level of offensive performance when the defense consistently got stops. Consistently held them to field goal attempts that were missed time and time again. I actually think I'm encouraged by the defense moving forward. They did give up 24 to Tulsa, but at a certain point when your offense cannot score themselves, the dam's going to break. But that's where I think best place to start is what happened to the offense? Why was it such an epic failure? I have a lot of thoughts on that, Colby, but I wanted to turn it over to you first.
And it's not just what happened to the offense today. Like, obviously, first drive right out of the gate, your left tackle breaks his leg. That was it very much a why can't we have nice things moment. Very much a pit in your stomach for Jacob Sexton moment, who has dealt with injuries his entire career. Earlier this week, he talked about feeling the best he's felt in 5 years and it lasts five plays. And I was physically sick for him when that happens. Let's get that out of the way right off the top. That is awful. I feel for him. I feel for his teammates. That was an awful, awful thing to happen right at the beginning of the game. Now to get to what happened the rest of the game. I spent a large chunk of the summer watching North Texas highlights, watching what I thought was an innovative offensive play caller go out, scheme guys into space, allow his quarterback to rip it all over the field, use his supposedly star running back, constantly make sure he's getting plenty of touches, creative touches too. And then today I turned my TV on and it looks like he picked up Casey Dunn's old play sheet as he was leaving his office to head to Tulsa. He got on the bus with Casey Dunn's play sheet. What were we watching from a run game perspective? Why was it just Messemaker snap, give to Hawkins, run into the back of the center? I mean, talk about getting outside the tackles. We never got outside the guards. We never got outside the guards, Carson. What happened to the run game? What happened to the creativity? Wyatt Young goes 8 for 84. Who cares? How many of them meant anything? Miles Coleman makes one catch, great catch earlier in the game. Justin Bowick has the catch on fourth down. Like, there was a little bit here and there, sure. But You got your teeth kicked in by Tulsa. Second year in a row. What are we doing? We're not even the second best team in the state for 2 years with a whole new regime. Think of how many checks were cut. Can you imagine if you cut one of those checks? The checks to get everybody out the door and then the checks to get everybody in the door. And then 24-10, you turn the ball over four times. You go 2 out of 6 on fourth down. That might as well be 4 more turnovers. You're giving up 8 possessions against Tulsa. It looked like absolute amateur hour out there. We're playing offense in the phone booth again. No shots downfield, aside from the early one to Miles Coleman. I mean, I really spent 3.5 hours trying to wrap my mind around what happened to fundamentally. I'm not talking about did we move Tulsa around. I'm talking about where did all the motion go? Where did all the crossing routes go? Where did scheming guys into space go? Where did Messemaker's accuracy go? I mean, the couple of times they did get guys schemed into space on these 15-yard outs, he's slinging it into the fourth row. Carson, I was just dumbfounded. I'm still dumbfounded. Like, my chest hurts, man. I'm angry. I'm angry at myself for allowing myself to believe again. I'm angry at Eric Morris for going out and calling the game he just called. Why was every fourth down run in less than 3 seconds and every single fourth down was the least creative play call you've ever seen in your entire life? It was pathetic. Start to finish, it was pathetic. I'm angry. I'm sad. It's a combination of emotions that I was not prepared to feel after this game. It feels like your whole season just got blown up before you've had dinner on the first Saturday of September.
We might have to bring back the old intro with the getting run off the field against Tulsa. We might have to bring that back for this year. But no, I completely agree with you. I think this game was won and lost on fourth down. Oklahoma State, 2 of 6 on fourth down. And here's my overall takeaway from why the offense was so bad. Number one, you mentioned it. Jacob Sexton carted off, broken leg, done. Crushing blow for the offensive line. But the reason Oklahoma State lost this game and the reason they lost it on fourth down was hubris. Complete overconfidence from Eric Morris. He thought he could just line up, not with his All-American running back, Michael Hawkins, who was 5th in the nation in rushing.
Caleb.
The first fourth down, they ran it up the gut with Hawkins, didn't get it. The next 2 attempts came from their second-string running back and their third-string running back. Eric Morris thought he could play as backups and still run it through the teeth of Tulsa's defense. That is a complete lack of awareness. That is a complete overconfidence that gets you beat. Doing that play on your own, going for it on fourth down from your own 30 when that play hasn't worked the entirety of the game is hubris. It is overconfidence, and it got his team beat. You and I are all for going for it on fourth down. We've talked about that until we're blue in the face. But if you're going to go for it, you need to make damn sure you can move the offensive line. Even the ones they got, Colby, the running back had to make a play a yard or two behind his offensive line to find a seam. This was not them just road grading. And then the other time, the fourth down, they at least finally tried to throw it out wide, just disaster again. But for me, going to your second and third string running backs early in the game in the biggest spots in the game was a complete lack of awareness and overconfidence for me. And that lost them the game.
Yeah, I thought the personnel was really odd, especially at running back. It was a lot of Trey Page early. I mean, I'm sitting there. I was at a buddy's house watching the game, and I'm like, did we not bring in a superstar running back this offseason? We got Trey Page out here on 4th and 1, just getting handoffs over right guard. And the one that he actually picks up, he puts the ball on the ground. And then you go to a day, and he comes out. I mean, he's not doing much. Nobody was doing much. What were your thoughts on Messemaker? I thought he looked nervous. Yeah. The overthrows on the out routes were brutal. Morris was awful. I thought Messemaker was pretty bad, too. I'm putting the onus of this game on Eric Morris. Like, if you're asking me a pie chart to assign blame, I'm assigning, like, 90% to Morris, and everybody else can share the other 10%. But of that piece of the pie, Mestemaker's got to get some. He didn't look comfortable. Maybe he spent the last 9 months reading his press clippings and hearing people talk about, well, maybe he only spends 1 year in Stillwater. He's going to go be a first-round pick. Look what he did at the Manning Passing Academy. I think we can stop worrying about how many years Drew Mestemaker is going to be in Stillwater. I think we can stop worrying that NFL scouts are going to be saying, you've got to come out because we're picking you at 12, kid. I think we can stop worrying about that, Carson, after what I just watched today at H.H. Chapman Stadium. That was a tough, tough scene. He was not better than Baylor Hayes. Flat out, he was not better than Baylor Hayes.
He missed a lot of throws that he never misses. So the reasons for that, only he can answer. I do think a lot of this game, too, is on the wide receivers. How many times was Mestemaker looking downfield and had to go to the underneath route? It was constant. In fact, I made a note of this, Colby. Did you know until 5:53 until 5 minutes, 53 seconds left in the game, do you know what their longest completion was until 5:53 left to go in the game?
It had to have been the Bowick touchdown, which was 18 yards?
Correct, 16 yards, in fact. That was their longest completion until 5:53 to go, and then they hit Wyatt Young for a 27-yard pass. That, to me, is the story of the game as well. You tried to force the run, and the receivers could not get open downfield, and Mestemaker was consistently pressured, and we didn't see the downfield passing in this game. It was obvious throughout the first half that Tulsa was loading up on the run. They were stopping the run, and Oklahoma State could not force them out of that. They could not complete a pass downfield, and that to me is shocking, quite frankly, considering the games that you listed off from Wyatt Young in the past, and the talent level we know Bowick has. So I thought first and foremost, too, give it up to Trey Lamb. I thought he completely outcoached Eric Morris. I mean, how many times did Tulsa, you mentioned this, how many times did Tulsa get to the edge in the running game? Whether that's through reverses, whether that's through stretch plays, they controlled the edge of the line of scrimmage in this game, both offensively and defensively. Oklahoma State could never get to the edge. In fact, they didn't really try. They tried to go up the gut, like you kept saying. So a big, big, big epic faceplant from Drew Mestemaker, who you are paying over $3 million a year. This is a new era, Colby, where you have a game like this, you're way more open to criticism when you're making $3.5 million.
Yeah, no doubt. And a first impression is a lasting impression. And we no longer, me, you, everybody in this chat right now, nobody cares what you did when you were wearing green. Nobody cares. You are 0-for-1 in orange. And it was as epic a failure as it could be. Like, I'm sitting here hoping to talk about Murray State didn't get better this offseason. I mean, talking about the Oregon, let's make sure we can go 1-2 in the non-con. And then you get into conference play. Obviously, we're going to have to redo some predictions. Nobody can feel very good after what we just watched. But I didn't think that Hawkins was on the field nearly enough. The motion, where was it? How many times today did Chris Barnes come flying across the formation and take a jet sweep? How many times did he even come flying across the formation? The answer is zero, Carson. The answer is zero. You talk about Tulsa getting to the edge. Caleb Hawkins, Trey Page, Ayode, they spent all day running into the back of their center and their guards. Tulsa, even on the touchdown, even when it wasn't in the running game, when LaDainian Fields got juked out of his shoes because he didn't keep outside contain, that's just Trey Lamb and Tulsa offense saying, okay, we've got a corner out here. Rip it out there. Make him make a tackle. You're out on the edge. He gets the corner. He goes and scores. It was a complete outclassing from the guys wearing the headsets, from the guys wearing the helmets. And it's just, again, we're not the second best team in the state 2 years in a row, 3 years in a row. I don't know how good Tulsa was in 2024. I assume they were better than we were. I don't know. We went to Tulsa that year. Alan Bowman was the national player of the week. This team goes up there, and I'm still having a hard time processing what I just watched. We had 27 first downs to Tulsa's 15 first downs. We had more total yards than Tulsa did. Tulsa committed 43 more yards worth of penalties. Tulsa went 1 of 11 on third down. Oklahoma State had 3 more minutes time of possession. Like, what? How does that equate to a 24-10 win? The fourth downs, obviously, you point to, those were massive. The turnovers came at really inopportune times. Trey Page picks up the fourth down, puts the ball on the ground. You come out of halftime, you need to make something happen. Drew Mestemaker puts the ball on the ground. He looked really uncomfortable under pressure, Carson. And for as much as we wanted to be optimistic all offseason about what this offensive line could look like, maybe with Jacob Sexton, we could still have some of that optimism. We'll never know. we're playing with the hand that we've been dealt. And that is, unfortunately, again, a brutal injury for Jacob Sexton. Dude cannot catch a break, and that's just it's awful. It's truly, truly awful. But now, are we going to have to watch Drew Mestemaker battle through pressure all season and throw the ball around the way he did today? Because he looked really uncomfortable, and I just – Eric Morris is going to have to get much more creative. If he was just not wanting to open the playbook against Tulsa so that you don't show Oregon anything, mission accomplished. The playbook was closed today, fully closed. You showed Oregon nothing, and they barely squeaked past Boise. Dan Lanning's going to run a military academy for the next 6 days, and they're about to put the beat down on us at Boone Pickens Stadium next week. That's an 11 a.m. kick. It's going to be hot by halftime. I might be home by 1:30.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jacob Sexton's a really talented football player. He came from OU. I think he suffered a season-ending injury in the first game last year. I feel horrible for him and the offensive line. But I don't want us to all of a sudden, I say us, meaning everyone involved with Oklahoma State football, to start pretending he's Russell Okung and that the offensive line just simply couldn't function without Jacob Sexton. I don't want to go that far. For me, my number one concern moving forward is the offensive line, which you just mentioned. I think the alarm bells were going off throughout the first half. I thought their offensive line would be more improved this year. And to me, it just looks like more of the same. They could not run the football, particularly when it mattered on fourth down. And really, Colby, like, they did move the ball. So they had four scoreless drives of at least eight plays. That is, football is a very simple game. If you can't convert drives and they fizzle out, it doesn't matter how well you move the football. And that's what happened. It wasn't all horrendous football offensively, but you have to get down there. If you're going to go for it on fourth down, you got to have plays that work. And those plays were just simply hopeless. So really encouraged. I got to say this again. I'm very encouraged by the defense. Look, I know giving up the amount of points they ended up giving up to Tulsa, they gave up a few big plays. That's fine. I think the number one concern for everyone coming into this season was that the defense was going to get just shredded. And how many times did the offense put them in horrible positions where they didn't give up a point? This game could have been way out of hand if the defense didn't get off the field as much as they did. Tulsa was like 0 of 7, 0 of 8 on third down. That's the one positive takeaway I have from this, because I ultimately do think when the dust settles coming out of this, again, unmitigated disaster, is I got to think the offense starts to get out of its own way. Will that occur against Oregon? Probably not. But in terms of getting ready for Big 12 play, I was encouraged by the defense. But make no mistake, picking this team to win 10 games looks laughable at this very moment. I hold my hands up. I will not defend it. I am basically shocked, Colby, that you took the best pieces of the North Texas offense.
A handful.
The best pieces they had. They only took 19 guys, like you keep mentioning. And you improved the receiver core. And you put up 10 points against Tulsa. It doesn't compute for me. And again, I think it was Eric Morris got way too cute, not playing Michael Hawkins in the most crucial plays of the entirety of the football game. Michael Hawkins doesn't touch the ball. In fact, their second and third team running back does. And I just thought Mestemaker wasn't good enough. There were several times he audibled, and we thought, okay, he's audible in here. That might open some things up. And no one ever got open downfield. So this is not all on Drew Mestemaker. I think this is on the receiving core, and it's on Coach Morris and Sean Brophy, who I think got way too cute way too often.
Your brain has to get reprogrammed to Caleb Hawkins. You've been on Michael Hawkins a few times.
Caleb, did I say Michael?
You said Michael Hawkins a few times. Yeah. Caleb Hawkins. That's all right.
Everyone, who was that, Brandon? Who's the basketball player? Brandon Roy.
Yeah. Brandon Roy. So I've got a few things I want to touch on there. Start with the defense. Overall, I thought they were mostly good. There was one play, the play I mentioned, where they get the ball to the edge. And I thought LaDainian Fields, and Deion Amade said on his interception he might have hurt his foot, and that's why he wasn't playing the last couple series of the game. But prior to that, whenever he gives up the touchdown where the guy just goes right around him, like, I thought that was just poor positioning. He's right in front of him. He's flat-footed. He gives the edge to him, and the guy just takes it. I thought that was really poor positioning on that play by a veteran player who I think needs to force him inside where he can get some help there. And Carson, you're going to stand up in meetings and give impassioned speeches? You're going to try to be one of the leaders of this team on defense? And then with a minute to go in the first half, you're going to go out of your way to shoulder check the quarterback 4 seconds after the ball is gone and Jahlil Johnson gets flagged for roughing the passer, which turns a 6-3 halftime lead into a 10-3 halftime lead. That was an embarrassing moment for Jahlil Johnson. He deserves to be called out for that. Did the kid flop? Sure, he flopped. And Jahlil Johnson gave him the opportunity because he saw him. He took 2 extra steps toward him. He checked him with the front of his shoulder, and he knocked him on the ground. I thought that was pathetic and embarrassing from Jahlil Johnson. So either one of those you want to touch on before I move to a comment.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think football is very simple. There are big spots in games where you simply cannot screw up to the level that Jahlil Johnson did. You get a stop, it's fourth down, you extend the game and give them essentially handed them a touchdown. Plays like that, and then the fourth down calls, like those are just pivotal moments in football games. Like, we're going to judge this entirety of this game. And Eric Moore said it coming off the field. He said that's about as bad as you can possibly play, as stupid as you can possibly play, as sloppy as you possibly can play. And this is the guy who you called out on the last show, rightfully so, who's like building team chemistry, doing the Ted Lasso bit with the jersey and everything. And for your senior heart and soul leader on your defense to do that in that spot really kind of laid the foundation, combined with the fourth down calls, for what ultimately took place.
Yeah, and then I want to touch on a comment here. And to be clear, I'm angry and yelling about everything, so if I yell at one of your comments, I'm not yelling at you personally. But we got a comment from T-Mac 803210. Says, turns out adding a bunch of G5 guys in the trenches didn't suddenly make our O-line power four level. Shocking. That ain't true. They went out and they brought in tackles from Michigan State and Oklahoma, and they brought in a center from Kansas. And this, again, Sexton breaks his leg. That's awful. I can't say it enough times. I was physically sick for about 10 minutes after watching that, because when they cut to commercial, they kind of zoomed in and you saw the leg, and it bent at the knee, and it bent in the middle of the shin, and it made my stomach churn. But again, they went out and brought in 3 power 4 guys. We will never know what it looked like with a full season of Sexton healthy. But Mercer and Lepo certainly didn't do much to impress me on that front. So, yeah, the offensive line was bad. And again, the defense was mostly fine. I thought that all around offensively and defensively, it was remarkably vanilla and remarkably conservative. Cassidy was not dialing up any blitzes, and man, whenever he did, we blitzed for what felt like the first time all game late in the third quarter, and Trey Lamb was all over it. Whoever called that play, they had a running back slip out in the left flat, just dumped it over the blitzer to him, and he takes off for 30 yards up the left sideline. It was vanilla defensively. There were no creative blitzes. They were rushing 3 and 4. Baylor Hayes was very comfortable all game long. It was very vanilla offensively. It was runs right up the middle, zero creativity, very little motion. Chris Barnes, athletic freak, speedster, didn't get him going side to side, didn't make Tulsa defend the entire field. They played in a phone booth, Carson. We love it. We've been watching it for the better part of a decade. 2017 is the last time I felt like I watched a real offense, Carson. Where is Mike Yurcich? Where is he? We've said play calling is Morris's superpower, and we just want him to call plays. All right. Okay, we're 4 quarters in, and I'm ready to hire Mike Yurcich. So let's see what happens next Saturday.
Do you know what I was Googling in the third quarter? It was buyouts. I was typing in Casey Dunn cigar. I wanted to post a picture of Casey Dunn with one of those stogies he used to have with Jim Knowles. I'm sure him and Mike Gundy are somewhere laughing their asses off, and they probably should, to be frank. You know, Mike Gundy's probably sitting there praying he's the missing link and that he is OSU football. It was a good first week for Mike Gundy and company, but no, I mean, I think that's ultimately the disappointing thing, Colby. It almost looked very unchanged from last year. That to me is the most shocking thing. It's not that they didn't convert fourth downs or they scored as few points as they did or as few yards. It's that the overall schemes looked so similar and so vanilla, like you mentioned. And I think ultimately that speaks to what I've been saying, the overconfidence. They thought they could come out here and just run their vanilla schemes and get past Tulsa and get ready for Oregon. Well, Trey Lamb and company had other ideas, and they flat out got out coached and outplayed. And that's the most disappointing thing. But I guess from here, I think we got to go to the Chris's University Spirit uniform review brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop. Be sure to shop at chrisuniversityspirit.com. All day, every day, free standard shipping on orders over $75. You might want to ship to your house if you don't want to go to the Oregon game now after watching that. Very disappointing, but Chris's will be there in Stillwater. And the Cowboys did look good, Colby. You nailed it on the first uniform prediction of the year. All white, icy white, with the brand and the stripe down the helmet. They look good. It was kind of like last year. Last year, they had some awesome uniform combos while looking like the worst team in the country. And today wasn't far off. They looked like one of the worst teams in the country again to get pretty much controlled, really, if you look at it holistically, pretty much controlled by Tulsa. Tulsa was never really under threat of losing this game. By the time Oklahoma State scored their first touchdown, Tulsa had already really seized control of the entire football game.
I love the all whites, and I don't know that I can bring myself to say one positive thing, even about the uniforms. I don't know that I can bring myself out to give a uniform Heisman. I don't know that I can do it. There were a couple guys who looked good out there in the uniforms. But
it's like our Pro V1 competition. Nobody picked Tulsa.
Yeah.
So no, we're not picking any Heismans either.
Yeah, you got to take that box of, hey, Echo, take the dozen golf balls and just go throw them into a pond. Just go throw them into a pond. That's what this day deserves.
Throw them into Theta Pond.
Look like Tarzan, play like Jane. That's what that was today. That's what that was. Look like Tarzan, play like Jane.
Anyone in the comments, has Eric Morris had his post-game presser yet? Someone just said it was very short. I wonder how, you know, we haven't really gotten to know Eric Morris yet post-game. I feel like we could read Mike Gundy like a book after listening to him for 21 years. This is a whole new experience, and I'm curious. I'm going to start looking here on Twitter, but I'm curious what Eric Morris's tenor was after the game.
Yeah, I am too. I just searched Eric Morris on Twitter. Eric Morris, I called some really bad plays on fourth and short. Boy, I'm glad that we figured that out after six tries. I'm glad we didn't figure it out after two or three tries. I'm glad that we figured that out after six tries. On the radio, you sent me this tweet from Scott Wright at halftime. He said, piss poor, as bad as you can play. As bad as you can coach, too. As bad as you can play and as bad as you can coach. He won the offseason. I'll be really curious now to see, like, we're not having fun anymore. We're not armadillo hunting anymore. It was all sunshine and rainbows for 9 months with Eric Morris. I'll be really curious to see how he handles this adversity. If Murray State was coming to town next week, maybe you could feel like, okay, if you had two cupcakes before conference play, maybe you could feel like, okay, maybe we get South Alabama vibes. They somehow right the ship and figure this out. There's no way anyone can have optimism with Oregon coming to town next week. But yeah, Carson, I'll be very curious to see how Eric Morris handles adversity, because we know for a long time there were two different Mike Gundys. There was the fun-loving Mike Gundy who would chop it up with the media, who had his dog running the hallways, who was a lot of fun to be around when times were good. And then there was the Mike Gundy who would stare you down and give short answers and glare at you and call you a jackass and all these other things whenever the team was losing. I'm very curious to see now. We're going to see real adversity. And right after the game today, maybe it was a short presser. Maybe he wasn't sure exactly what to say. He's going to stand up there for a half hour on Monday and answer questions and have to explain away what just happened in Tulsa. And I don't know how he explains this away. It's unbelievable. Good tweet you just threw up on the screen, or comment from J. Rove. Morris says he needs to fix five or six plays to get the formula right. I'll burn all my OSU gear. Aaron Yuntz earlier said, if Morris comes out and says we were 8 to 10 plays away, I'll jump off my house. It was that game from an Oklahoma State perspective. It should have been aired on Comedy Central. It was not on the right channel.
It was bad. And I how were you feeling at halftime? Because
bad.
Everyone was panicking by that point. I really wasn't. I thought they were moving the ball fine. The fourth downs, you know, they had a lot of empty possessions where they did move the ball quite well. Particularly the first fourth down they failed to convert with Caleb Hawkins. I really did think the defense was playing well. And they continued to do so. I really thought the offense, and this is where Eric Morris is supposed to make his salary too, is going into halftime, getting all of the information as to what Tulsa's doing defensively. That's where coaches make their money, is halftime adjustments. And that to me actually might be the most disappointing thing coming out of this game, is they never adjusted. They never were able to figure out Tulsa's defensive schemes, and Mestemaker included in that. You know, he apparently gets to pick from three or four plays, and that's Oklahoma State was the worst third quarter team in the country last year. They got completely blown off the field in third quarters last season. Well, not a great start to this year either, and not very impressive adjustments from Sean Brophy and Eric Morris on the offensive side. That to me was shocking. I really expected them to come out, score on the first possession, and go and win this game. And they were lucky to keep it as close as they did, quite frankly, when you really take a look at it.
You're absolutely right. The soccer player for Tulsa, he was just wide right. Maybe if Jahlil Johnson doesn't run in to Baylor Hayes, maybe he misses another field goal. Maybe it's 3-3 going to halftime instead of 10-3 going into halftime. But yeah, Morris and Brophy, they've got a lot of soul searching to do. In terms of game planning, you really didn't see anything today. Anything outside that first drive. I actually like a few plays basically before Sexton got hurt. That drive, Oklahoma State was just humming. Absolutely humming. The deep ball to Coleman was an absolute dot from Drew Mestemaker with PI. Caleb Hawkins run it for 12 yards up the middle. You get Wyatt Young on a screen. You get down inside the five. You get no points, but you're thinking, okay, you drove down the field, and then it's like 2.5 hours before you score a touchdown. It was unbelievable what we just watched. Carson, I want to read you a tweet from Bill Haston on February 11th. He takes a picture, posts a picture of Trey Lamb on Tulsa's basketball court. Halftime of the UAB-Tulsa basketball game, Hurricane football coach Trey Lamb addresses the Reynolds Center crowd, mentioning the September 5th opener against Oklahoma State. "We'll beat their ass again," Lamb said. Boy, he must be feeling himself right now. He must be feeling himself. And what an idiot I am to sit up here for the last 2 weeks to do these radio hits and talk about Trey Lamb's had his fun. He's fixing to get put in his place. Okay, all the haters, every Oklahoma State hater from this offseason, every single one who said mean green North, who said good luck winning the Big 12 with North Texas's players, every last one of them gets to victory lap tonight. Every last, if they're watching this, they get to laugh at me. Yeah, that's the risk that we take whenever we put these headsets on and we make these public predictions and we get bold and we get behind our team and then they fall on their face. Again, when we came on the air, I just covered my face up. I'm embarrassed to be seen with all the things I've said the last 3 weeks.
The haters said OSU couldn't beat Tulsa. The haters said OSU couldn't win 10 games. Congrats to the haters. The haters were correct. Congrats to the haters. They were absolutely correct. And yeah, we gotta own this. I mean, I picked OSU to win 10 games. That obviously was way off the mark. And again, I do think there is a large, in this day and age, in this era of NIL, a lot of this is guesswork. I mean, 91 new players. I seriously thought with the head coach, coordinator, there was so much symmetry coming together that I didn't think it would look this sloppy, this disjointed offensively right from the jump. How much of that was Tulsa? I think I give Tulsa a ton of credit defensively. They never let Mestemaker get going deep. But I think a lot of it came down to hubris and cockiness, quite frankly, from Eric Morris, for sure. So keep firing off questions. We'll get to as many as we can. Good call by the haters. Yeah, I screwed up the phrase, but I'm not sure where to go from here, Colby, other than that was embarrassing. Do you have the final stats here? I'll pull them up.
Yeah, no, I've got the final stats here. Oklahoma State, total yards, 368, Tulsa 361, 27 Oklahoma State first downs to 15 for Tulsa. Oklahoma State was 5 of 16 on third down. Tulsa was 1 of 11, 241 passing yards for Oklahoma State, 227 for Tulsa. Tulsa ran the ball for 134 to Oklahoma State's 127. 4 turnovers for Oklahoma State, 1 for Tulsa. 2 of 6, as we've mentioned, on fourth down for Oklahoma State, 1 of 1 for Tulsa. And then you look here, Carson, if anybody has any unders out there, I would love some unders. You know, I sat here Thursday night, over, way under for Drew Mestemaker, 29 of 49, 241 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 picks. Caleb Hawkins, 18 for 79 in that game. 18 carries for Hawkins, 6 for a day, 7 for Page. Wyatt Young, 8 for 84, Coleman, 4 for 40, Barnes, 5 for 36, Hawkins, 6 for 29. Justin Bowick had the touchdown, one of his 2 catches for 22 yards. The inability to get anybody into space, the inability for anything to look easy offensively. Carson, I thought in the first game against Tulsa, with what I watched out of that North Texas offense last year, I thought we would finally get back to a situation where we had an offense that against what should be an inferior opponent playing at a lower level of college football, that we would just go out and at least for several drives, offense would just look easy. The way it looked 9 years ago when I enjoyed college football, when Mason Rudolph and James Washington and Justice Hill were making it look easy. Boy, did we take those times for granted. Everything looks hard. 10 yards feels like a long ways away. Third and 10, let's run into the back of the guard to set up fourth and 7. My God, every time there was an incompletion on first and 10, did anybody in the state of Oklahoma know what was coming on second and 10? You better believe it. You know what's coming on second and 10? Third and 8. Let's run it right up the middle. It was unbelievable how vanilla it was. I mean, I can say it until I'm blue in the face, but yeah, very disappointed with Eric Morris. What he said after the game, I'll have some interest in. I'll be really interested in what he has to say on Sunday. Comment you just threw up on the screen. Gundy went 4-7 his first year. Did Eric Morris get the same kind of grace? I get we live in an instant success society, but are we still not going to give a first-year head coach grace? Carson, I'm about out of breath over here. I'll let you handle that one first. Does Eric Morris get the grace in your one that might
that's a reason I showed that tweet. The answer to that is, or tweet, I'm showing my age here. YouTube comment is what I showed. I think the answer to that is an emphatic no. I mean, you invested in this team and this roster financially. You invested in this head coach financially, and Eric Morris knows what's at stake here. So no, like this is not going to be like the days of college football where you give a coach 3-4 recruiting cycles to get his guys in is gone. So if this season goes the way week one did, I'm not sitting here saying they're going to fire him after one season, but I'm saying the leash will be extremely, extremely short in year two. There's gonna be a lot of hard conversations going on this week in Stillwater. It starts with Eric Morris and his staff, trickles down to the team. And there's gonna be some hard conversations with Chad Weiberg and Eric Morris as well. I mean, this is not at all what Weiberg and the boosters have cashed checks for. This ain't it. This was worse than their performance against Tulsa last year. Someone in the comments said we had over 400 yards of offense against Tulsa last year compared to this year. It really could not have been a worse debut for Eric Morris, Drew Mestemaker, and this star-studded, expensive roster that they now have.
It's so much different than it was 22 years ago, 21 years ago, whenever Mike Gundy took over the program. You turned your entire roster over. You brought in the number one, basically the number one offense in the country. I understand that was at a lower level. They didn't play Oregon today. They played Tulsa today. That is a lower level. That is a team that was really bad in the same conference as North Texas last year. Yes, Tulsa also turned over their roster, brought in 25 transfers, had the highest average grade of transfers in the American. Good for Tulsa. I don't care. No, he does not get the leash that Mike Gundy got 21 years ago because it's a different sport. They brought in 92 new players, and if you want to tell me it all doesn't work to the tune of 10-2, if you want to tell me they can't beat Oregon, they can't beat Texas Tech, they lose some road games, they go 7-5, sure. Doesn't matter against Tulsa. There's nothing that you can say that can get me to give anyone grace for what happened on that field today against Tulsa. Because, I mean, going into this game, I would have told you for sure the North Texas team that won 12 games last year in the American would have just been able, that entire roster could have just come to Stillwater and went into Chapman Stadium and won. And at no point did it look like you were going to win that game. I mean, we're sitting there at halftime. It's 10-3 coming out of half. I mean, we're talking about it. It's like, do y'all think we're going to win this game? I'm like, I honestly have no idea. I said coin flip at halftime. At 50-50, we don't look like a good football team. So people are over here like, I love Oklahoma State much more than they love me. Somebody says, does a one win or less season get Morris fired? Boy, it is Saturday, September 5th. And we are having hypotheticals about what could get Morris fired after 1 year. I don't think there's anything that could get him fired after 1 year because you just, I mean, those checkbooks only have so many checks in them at some point. But I don't know, Carson. Obviously, 10-2, we can just throw that off the table. I feel really disgusting about my 8-4. If I asked you today, pick it for me. Pick it for me. They've got 11 games left. One of those is against Oregon. One of those is against Texas Tech, who I picked them to beat. I'm throwing that out the window. So let's say 9 teams left on their schedule who aren't Oregon or Texas Tech. How many of those 9 do they win?
10-2 is technically still in play, Colby.
Technically, that is
not mathematically eliminated yet.
That is the most liberal use of the word technically in the history of podcasting.
Oh God. Based on what I saw today, I think 7-5 would be overachieving. If they're not going to get first downs and touchdowns against Tulsa, how are they going to do that against Houston, Texas Tech on the road and in Manhattan? That game in Manhattan got a lot tougher. I was like dancing on Houston's grave when they were struggling with Oregon State and then OSU went and lost to Tulsa. And, you know, it's funny, too. I was just, as you were talking about Morris and his status, I was reminded of my conversation with Bill Haston when you were on vacation. Of he was saying he thinks Morris is going to be kind of like one and done or two and done and go to the SEC. Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe he's one and done and getting fired. But I think a lot of hyperbole is going to get thrown out after losing game one. I reserve judgment until I see it for a larger sample size. Again, I do think this is one game in which they had a lot of empty possessions. It's very, like, to me, the number one concern is the offensive line. They're going to have to scheme around that, and they didn't do a very good job of that. It would help if they played their best running back who can actually run through tackles. That might be that's kind of what I'm leading to now, Colby, is if you're wearing the headset with Brophy and Morris, like, what adjustments do you make offensively? I think number one is play your best tailback. Don't worry about the heat. Don't worry about if he's tired. Especially on fourth down, rest him on first and second and get him in there on third and fourth, if that's what your concerns are. And how are you going to get your downfield passing game going? Because Tulsa just laid the blueprint for how to shut down Drew Mestemaker. They made Drew Mestemaker look very, very, very average in this game.
Yeah, they did. Boy, when you said 7-5, I was taken aback. That means 7-2 in those 9 games that aren't Oregon and Texas Tech. Several of which are on the road in conference. I think we could be staring 4-8 in the face. 4-5 in those other 9. I don't know, man. Again, they were able to move the ball some today. The fourth downs quite literally can't be as bad today as they were. They turned the ball over 4 times. Our NIL refund's a thing. That's pretty good. Carson, I was just looking because I wanted to do some quick math. 373. It's about how many people are on this stream right now. That's how many days it's been since Oklahoma State won a football game. 373. And in that time, I would guess north of $30 million has been spent to get an entire football program out the door and an entire new one in the door. And it's been 373 days since you've won a football game. And somebody else says in a weak Big 12, too. I do think it's a fairly weak Big 12 conference, and I don't think Oklahoma State's doing much to strengthen it as far as what I've seen today. I don't want to be negative Nancy and tell everybody it's just going to be a hard 3 months, but I just watched something that, like, I don't even know if I'm shocked. I'm in shock. Like, whatever the physical reaction of being in shock is, we're going to have to process this and see how we feel throughout the week, see how we feel after Eric Morris has spoken on Monday. I will probably go back and watch this game. I was at a buddy's house. We were watching it. There were kids running around and stuff. So I will probably go back and watch it and try to dial in more on what was happening offensively in terms of scheme, in terms of formations, in terms of motion. I want to count how many times they ran the ball outside the tackles, like how many creative running plays there were. I think I'm going to be able to count them on one hand or less. What was going on with Hawkins? Was it just hot? Like, what's your theory on why Caleb Hawkins spent so much of the first half watching Trey Page play football and spent a large chunk of the game? I mean, you're in a fight for your life against Tulsa, just an absolute fight for your life. And your superstar running back carries the ball 18 times. They got it into his hands 6 times in the passing game. So, I guess you could say 24 touches. Is that enough when you're fighting for your life against Tulsa? I don't know, man. Is he your best player? I don't know. He spent a lot of time watching that game today with very expensive seats. I understand he touched the ball 24 times. It was hot on that field. Maybe I'm being greedy. I don't know. But on TV, it sure seemed like I was saying every 30 seconds, where is Hawkins? Where's your superstar running back? It felt like all day I was asking myself that question.
Yeah, I mean, I even tweeted that. I was like, is he injured? Why is he not out there? I think that speaks to what I said earlier. It's hubris. I think in the first half, he thought, we're going to win this game. Let's keep Michael Hawkins. Michael. I got to quit saying Michael Hawkins. That is the former OU quarterback, plays at West Virginia. Caleb Hawkins. I think he wanted to keep him fresh and prioritize that over winning the damn game. And that, to me, tells me that you're overlooking Tulsa, that you're assuming that you're just going to win this game because you're not playing your best players. That, to me, is inexcusable. And that, to me, really was a key contributing factor to them losing to Tulsa, was not playing your best players. And again, the Page fumbles it, and the other guy gets stoned. And that's what we saw. The best drives of the game went through Caleb Hawkins. Every single good drive Oklahoma State had went through Caleb. And so I think that's the number one adjustment to make. But I really need to think that they got to really reevaluate what they were doing in the passing game. Because, look, Tulsa's, there's an okay team. You're going to face so many more better defenses the rest of the way, starting next week. Which, did you see the Oregon score? I guess they snuck it out against Boise State. Yeah. I actually liked Boise State plus the points in that game. That's one thing I got right this week. I didn't get anything else right.
Oh, I got everything wrong. I gave Stanford out of my lock of the week. They were cooked by halftime. I Thursday was a rough night for me, Carson. I said maybe Darian Mensah and Malachi Toney take a little bit of time to establish chemistry. And by halftime, Malachi Toney set every Miami receiving record at a school where Michael Irvin and Andre Johnson played. Like, it was, Thursday was a rough night for me. I just saw a really funny tweet. Are we sure that Eric Morris actually killed that armadillo? Has anybody seen it? Like, we've been told a lot of things. We've been told a lot of things, but what have we seen? What have we seen? Vader119 says my favorite part was when the running was working and they switched to passing.
Yeah, like, I brought that comment up because one of my biggest takeaways from the first half was how predictable the play calling was. It felt like every time they should pass, they ran up the middle, and every time they should run, they threw it wide or threw it, you know, downfield, and, you know, Mestemaker was inaccurate. It just, the whole game just felt completely disjointed, completely sloppy, and it just felt very predictable. It felt very phone boothy, as you like to say, on offense. And again, like, that is the most baffling thing to me of this entire game. It's not the fact that they lost to Tulsa. Well, that is pretty shocking. It's the manner in which they looked completely inept offensively. That to me is shocking. And I didn't see that coming. I got to be honest. I was dead wrong on that. And that does not bode well for the rest of the season, for sure.
Yeah, I think the most concerning thing for me in the short and long term, I came into this season with a confidence, a hubris myself, a near certainty that we were getting an offensive mind in Eric Morris who was really good at maximizing his offensive talent. And, you know, we get a comment over here from Matt Randall, maybe Boak isn't as good as we were making him out to be. How could we know? How could we know after today whether Justin Boak is any good? How could we know after today whether Chris Barnes is any good? Carson, is Chris Barnes fast? Have you seen it with your own eyes? I don't know, because they never got him into space. Whenever they did use him, it was on a 7-yard turnaround in the middle of the field. Where is the offensive scheme from Eric Morris that gets players into space that maximizes the talents of his guys? If Chris Barnes really runs a 4-3 like I'm expected to believe, and he doesn't get one jet sweep against Tulsa to see if he can get the edge, he doesn't get one quick screen to the outside. I mean, that hurry up offense that I mentioned, that clip on Thursday, that 90-second clip that they put out a few weeks ago where they're hurry up and it's Barnes and he's got the corner and they're going and it's Hawkins and it's this and it's that. None of that today. Absolutely none of it. Just a disastrous coaching performance from a guy who I thought was going to be an offensive maestro.
Well, it even felt too, like, one thing I noticed, even when they got some semblance of rhythm offensively, there was always something that tripped them up. There was a holding call at one point when the offense was humming. They were going quick. They were getting first downs, holding, back them up. Now you're behind the chains. And there was a period where they finally just threw it in the flat to Wyatt Young, which is just a staple of their offense. Like, wow, where's that been? It's an easy 10 yards. And he cramps up off the field. Don't see him, I think, the rest of that series. It just, every single time, and this is how football is sometimes, every single time they got momentum, there was something goofy or just a mistake here and there that just derailed their drives. And that's why they had, you know, so many drives that ended up without points that were eight plays or more. It's just, it just, it was one of those games where they simply could not get out of their own way. And I think that that ultimately is coaching. Don't hold the guy when your offense is moving the ball. They didn't even need to hold him on that play. Wyatt Young, drink your pickle juice before the game. I know it's 150 degrees, but we need you out there. Like, it just, it felt like every time just the rug got pulled out from under him. It was just one of those frustrating afternoons.
Yeah, it was. And it did feel, aside the 141 here says, it felt like everything that could go wrong did go wrong. Yeah, you know, an inopportune penalty at the wrong time. Obviously, the turnovers were killer. We cannot possibly harp on the fourth downs enough. Like, you talk about swing plays in game. Like, there is no amount of time that we could spend talking about the fourth downs that would do justice to how much they really swung this game. I mean, can you imagine, Carson? I mean, God forbid that first fourth down of the game, instead of when Tulsa has 11 guys all keyed in on Caleb Hawkins, just ready to attack every gap in your now depleted offensive line, instead of just turning and giving it to him and letting him run into a wall, can you imagine if they'd gone play action and dumped it over the line of scrimmage into the back of the end zone for an easy touchdown? Would this game have played out differently? We'll never know, because that's not what they did. They ran into the wall, and when they had a chance a little bit later in the game, they ran into the wall again and again and again. And then they were like, oh, that's not working. You know what we should do instead? We should throw it 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage to Miles Coleman with three defenders on his side of the field. Maybe that'll work. Nope. Big fat goose egg on that one. Silof141 asks, what do we have to be hopeful for? It's a great question. Carson, what do we have to be hopeful for? J.C. Hoyt brought in a hell of a class. I guess we can be hopeful for that. David Taylor seems to have things moving in the right direction. I guess we can be hopeful for that. Eric Morris has killed my spirit on day one. Day one.
Well, I think if there's something to be hopeful for, it's that the offense looks completely different against Oregon and scores points on Oregon. If they're able to figure out what went wrong against Tulsa and move the ball and score against Oregon, that bodes well for the rest of the season. And again, I think the defense really showed me a lot in this game. I mean, they did really well to get off the field on third down. That was the number one thing I wanted to see, was forcing turnovers, which they didn't do, other than that awesome interception from LaDainian Fields. But the second most important thing this defense can do to supplement the offense is get off the field on third down, on money downs. And they did exceptional at that. They're going to be amongst the top in the nation after week one on third down defense. They just are. And so while it feels like the season's over, I do think this offense is not worse than last year's, even though the point total would tell you that they are and the yard totals would tell you they are. I'm still hopeful the offense figures this out, plays their best guys. Miles Coleman, I think, was a lone bright spot. He made some really tough catches, like you just mentioned him. I think he's a good player. And I think this is a real challenge to the receiving core and Drew Mestemaker going up against Oregon. You guys got to start making your money. Hawkins needs to play more, and the receivers got to get open, and Mestemaker has to find them. Because too many times, Mestemaker bought himself time, looked downfield, and nobody was open. And he had to run it several times. That cannot happen. They have to figure out how to get the receivers loose, because they did a piss poor job doing it themselves.
Silent141 says, I still think we looked better than last year's team, TBH. I think there's obviously more talent on the field than last year's team, no doubt about that. I think that talent underperformed to about the maximum level that they could today. Craig says, you guys keep talking about offensive scheme. What scheme? No, that is what we're talking about. We're wondering where it went. The scheme that we're talking about is the one that I spent watching all summer, watching North Texas highlights and games. And then I didn't see it today. So we're wondering where it went. We're going way too long here without shouting out some of our wonderful sponsors. Echo Contracting. They did a fun little giveaway this week on Twitter. Tried to do a fun little giveaway this week on Twitter. I guess they'll try it again next week, where I imagine we will have 100% of score predictions flipped from the good guys to the bad guys. I can't imagine anybody will pick Oklahoma State to win next week. Follow Echo Contracting on Twitter for that fun giveaway. Echo Contracting is a proud sponsor of the pod, offering electrical contracting services throughout all of Oklahoma. They pride themselves on high-quality professional jobs done right the first time. Call or text for a quote today, 405-279-8444, or email info@echo-contracting.com. I did think Miles Coleman was a bright spot today. I thought he looked quick. Again, I don't think they used him very effectively. Didn't do a good job of getting the ball into his hands in space. He had a catch on a 3rd and 8 earlier in the game where it was like he and the defender got to the ball at the exact same time, and he just wrestled it down to the ground, similar to the way at the end of the first half. LaDainian Fields had what looked to be an interception and then had it ripped from his hands, which, again, would have only led to a field goal had Jahlil Johnson not then shoulder-checked the quarterback to the ground. So it was just one thing after another, Carson. But Coleman looked quick. He looked good with strong hands. He's the one guy that you could probably get me to say something positive about today. I don't know. I thought Tate Romney looked good in the middle of the defense. When the tackle was there to be made in the middle of the field, he made it. Same thing with Wislowski. Those guys made their tackles that needed to be made in the middle of the field. Bodner gets called for a pass interference in the second half. He's just, guys starting in the left slot, and he's just running a post, and Bodner's just holding on to his shoulder pad, like, for 10, 12 yards. He's just holding on to his shoulder pad. We watched it live, and we're like, come on, another pass interference. And then we watched the replay, and it's like, good Lord, he didn't let go until the ball went over his head and landed on the ground. So, I'll shout out Miles Coleman and then the linebackers, Tate Romney, Ethan Wislowski, I thought did a good job. Isaiah Chisholm got to the edge a couple of times. It is what it is, man. It is what it is. It's pain.
This is from Mestamaker owes 3.5 mil. He created this account. And his username is Mestamaker owes me $3.5 million. Thank you for the super chat, Carson. Oh, Carson, they're all making money, all right. Just not all caps earning it. I love that. I can't disagree. They didn't earn it on week one. But one last note of, and I think people think I'm being way too optimistic here. Look, there's nothing to be optimistic about as far as the offense is concerned and really just the whole team. But I will say, I thought the defense, there were several times where Tulsa had a seam in the running game and a guy would break through the seam on the edge and make a tackle either for a loss or to stop it from being a big gain. That happened way more often than I really was expecting in this game. So again, I'm pleasantly surprised with the defense, thoroughly, utterly flabbergasted by what we saw on offense. Let's start, fire off your questions. We'll get to as many as we can. I'm not sure there's much more to discuss. I mean, special teams was whatever. The punter did his Aussie rules thing. There were several times it looked like a shank, but he got a good bounce, which is the appeal of an Aussie rules punter.
Tulsa coach Trey Lamb on TV after beating Oklahoma State today. Quote, it could have easily been 37-10.
No lies detected.
Talk your talk, Trey Lamb. Talk your talk. I'm done. I'm done refuting you. Are they on the schedule next year? God, I hope not. Boy, can we get UT Martin in the place of Tulsa? We don't need this Turnpike rivalry anymore. Now that we're the third best team in the state, only cupcakes from now on, please. Please, can we at least get to 3 every year with some FCS scheduling? It could have easily been 37-10. Good for him. Good for him. He walked.
No lies detected, man. Hey, you've earned it. You win. To the victor go the spoils. I have no issues with anything. Trey Lamb could say much worse, frankly, after what I just watched, and he wouldn't be wrong. Good for him. Good for Tulsa. Good for their program. They clearly hired a young, up-and-coming, really good football coach because he's now beaten Oklahoma State 2 straight times. And the last time they had lost prior to that was 1998, was the last time Tulsa beat Oklahoma State. So, yeah, it's embarrassing is the word. If I'm Chad Weiberg, Eric Morris, and everyone involved with the football program, this is an embarrassing drive from Tulsa to Stillwater. It just is. There's no sugarcoating it. And you're rewarded with a game against Oregon, who's number 2 in the country next week, who, again, was in a dogfight with Boise State. But yeah, it's Colby, I thought we were going to have a lot more fun this season on this podcast. But so far, more of the same that we've seen the last 2-3 years. But any other takeaways from this game for me? I think I've hit most of my points. Any questions you guys have in the comments, you can fire them off. But I think someone asked us to recalibrate our predictions. I think I just did. I think 7-5 might be a little optimistic, quite frankly. But I don't want to come out and be Mr. Optimism here, but I think a lot of this is correctable. Now, again, the caveat here is you're going to be playing a lot better teams from here on out than Tulsa, so maybe not. But I just refuse to believe that this play-calling team with Brophy and Morris, this quarterback, this running back, and this receiving core, albeit with a lackluster offensive line, it turns out, I refuse to believe they're going to be this inept the rest of the season. This was just one of those games where they couldn't get out of their own way. So I am not sitting here saying the season's over. I think everyone predicting them to not go to a bowl game this year needs to just pump the brakes, even though this was an unmitigated disaster. They're not winning 10 games, though. I can say that with confidence.
Yeah, they're not going to win 10 games. We can throw that out the window. I don't feel very good about my 8. I don't want to go full 3-9 yet after watching a game in which I count those fourth down turnovers as turnovers. So in a game where you turned the ball over 8 times, I would like to think that maybe we don't see a ton of that again. I'd have a real hard time predicting us to win more than 6. Here's my problem, Carson. You asked me if I had any other takeaways. My other big takeaway is that I thought this offense would be at such a high level in this conference that you would have a margin for error week to week that would allow you to play less than perfect football and win games. I have a hard time feeling that way after what I just watched. I think that this team is going to have to be much more buttoned up. They're going to have to win the turnover battle to win some of these games. The margin for error that I thought was going to be there because I thought they were going to be able to score a bunch of points, that has to go away whenever I watch them score 10 points against Tulsa's defense, which is not exactly the 2000 Ravens. Yeah, that's the big takeaway for me is that, you're not going to be able to go out and beat the bad teams on your schedule by 3 touchdowns if your offense is not going to be anything close to what we thought it was going to be. And, I mean, maybe it was just overly vanilla today out of hubris. I don't know. Whatever it was, if that was the case, you know, shame on Coach Morris. That was a pretty brutal way to go out. What schools can we beat? From Chris Elmore. Murray State, I'm still putting on that list. I still think we get past the Racers. Beyond that, Iowa State's a road game. Carson, I really expect them to be bad. Again, margin for error might not be what I thought it was. I mean, I think we were both predicting them to win that game by less than 10 points in Ames before we saw them get their teeth kicked in by Tulsa. Iowa State, Colorado's going to be really average. West Virginia's going to be really average. Like, there are still schools on their schedule that if Oklahoma State plays a buttoned-up game and does not turn the ball over and converts a couple of fourth downs, kicks whenever it's smart to kick, you talk about, you know, being transported to an alternate dimension. I've sat here for 8 years and begged for Mike Gundy to go for it more, and today I'm just like, Jesus, do we have soccer players on the roster? Can anybody kick a football? It's like my brain.
One field goal was nice. He drilled it.
Oh, yeah, it was pure. He player of the game, star of the day. Keltner, big day for Keltner. I don't know. I mean, there are still winnable games on their schedule, Carson. Somewhere in the 5-7 range. 7 seems like a lot because I don't think they're beating Oregon or Tech. That means they're going 7-2 in the rest of those games. 5-4 feels more realistic if they get their act together. If they don't get their act together, 3-9's on the table again. I mean, there's a wide range of outcomes now after a game in which they just gave up the possession 8 times and got beat by Tulsa. There's a wide range of outcomes for the next 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, this was a severe reality check. That's what this was. This was a reality check that, Eric Morris, you're now in the Power 4 level, even though you just played Tulsa. So you're still not at the Power 4 level, actually. But this is a whole different ball game, a whole different level of expectations than you had in Denton, Texas. And he's going to feel that this week. And I like what someone had to say. They said the press conference was interesting and that he called a spade. I think that's a good start. Didn't sugarcoat anything. And I think that's refreshing. I don't want to hear any talk. I want to see real change next week against Oregon, or this season is going to be the same old dumpster fire we've seen the last 2 years. So that to me is, again, just incredibly disappointing for a fan base that was just chomping at the bit. They had a great crowd to start this game. All you saw in the stands was orange, and it cleared out with the heat. I don't blame anyone for taking refuge in the shade, but really just an epic faceplant in week 1 for a program that was just dying to be good again and dying to be relevant again. And conference realignment is still a thing. And this is where I think Chad Weiberg is going to start to get nervous. It's way less about the result against Tulsa as it is if this season continues to go that direction, where does that leave Oklahoma State in the picking order of conference realignment? Because if all those statistics of Oklahoma State being in the top 10, top 15 are waning significantly after the last 2 years, you can't afford another season where you're, you know, pretty much a laughingstock nationally.
No, you're absolutely right. And as you were saying all that, I was scrolling here looking for some quotes, and I've got some. I'll just rattle a few off, and then you can give your reactions in the general stance. Eric Bailey tweets out some Drew Mestemaker quotes, says, Eric Morris didn't pull any punches in Oklahoma State's postgame locker room. He sat in there and said straight up, that's the most embarrassing offensive performance he's ever been a part of. I'd agree. I'd say the same for me, Mestemaker said. Eric Morris says, we've got a lot of problems to fix. Obviously, we got Oregon coming to town next week. And boy, I tell you, if they watch that film, they'll be licking their chops. No doubt about it. Eric Morris on losing preseason momentum said, for a second year in a row, Tulsa reigned supreme on us on the football field. That's a fact. There's no way that we don't leave and feel all of that momentum come to a screeching halt. We got to do something to fix that. Yeah, it was as bad of a first impression as we could have possibly gotten. But your thoughts there? Mestemaker says Morris doesn't pull any punches. Morris says Oregon's licking their chops. What are your thoughts on kind of just a couple of the quotes that are filtering out?
Yeah, I think when you put up the piss poor performance we saw, that's about all you can really say. You can't come out there and do the, we were 5-6 plays away when Tulsa really should have beat you by more if they could have a field goal kicker that could kick and all of those things. So no, good on him for not sugarcoating it, not giving us a load of BS, not making excuses like about Sexton going out. Again, I think that was a massive loss. I thought it really kind of killed the morale of the team, at least on that drive. Like, I think it affected the play calling on that drive. And while that was a killer, I'm glad he didn't just come out and make the entire offensive performance the fact that their left tackle broke his leg, because there was so much more going on in this game than having an injury on the offensive line. And this is a zero-sum, no-excuses game. So at least we didn't hear a bunch of excuses from the new head coach moving forward. I think there's not a lot of excuses you could make, but hey, he didn't go searching for them. So I think that's a credit to him. I just want to see change. I want to see more creativity next week. I want to see some downfield passing. Their longest play from scrimmage was 27 yards on that pass to Wyatt Young. That was really kind of a broken play in a lot of ways. So you have to get explosive plays back in this offense. And I think that starts with getting Michael Hawkins going earlier than they did. I think they tried to get him going early. Maybe that's more on the offensive line, but no excuses, but I want to see real changes starting against Oregon.
Yeah, I did get a text from my mom. Morris did say, I got out coached today. Rinse, repeat. Good. If you got that as the free space on your bingo card, if you've had that as the free space on your bingo card for the past 24 months, go ahead and take a drink. Tough scene. I was looking at that text again. This is a good one here from Texas Ribeye. Would have been cool to have a home and home with Oregon from 2008 through 2023, but of course the football gods gave us a home and home in 25 and 26. I don't know if it was just the football gods that had to do with Oregon not being on the schedule all that time, but we went up there last year. Again, really bad, awful. I wanted to go the entire podcast without saying anything positive. But we've been going more than an hour now. Carson, there are the pieces. There is the outline. There is a resemblance of, I think, a real football team underneath what we just watched today. It was the sloppiest thing I've ever seen. But last year, I watched that. Nice. We've got a Michael Hawkins count going. Last year,
I don't know why I'm doing that. I have no idea where that's coming from. I didn't even cover Michael Hawkins when he was with OU. I don't know where that's coming from. I apologize to everyone. I'm having a worse week than Mestemaker and Morris combined with my podcasting. So I'm right in the same doghouse with them.
Yeah, real quick before I get back to my point. Unfortunately for you, your prediction went like it like made waves on the Sports Animal this week and stuff. Like, was your phone blowing up this afternoon? I got plenty of texts, but were you was your phone about to buzz itself off the table?
No, not really. Okay. I think people like were probably just like a little somber, like, oof, probably not a good time to text him. I'm sure he's getting it from all angles, but nah, it's fine. And look, you said it, like, we're on here, we're on the record, and sometimes you get things right. I've been right a lot in this, in my career. I've been wrong too. And this is one I was definitely wrong about. I really am shocked. I am very much in a state of shock that they look so bad offensively. Again, Tulsa's not that great a team. And they made them look like Alabama defensively.
Yeah, and, so, and maybe Tulsa will be better this year than they were last year. Maybe they will. Maybe Tulsa goes out and wins 8 games this year and looks really good. I don't know. It really won't change the way I feel about today. The point that I was going to make is last year I turned the TV on week after week and I watched an Oklahoma State team that I really felt was devoid of talent. Like, I did not think if all of a sudden Zane Flores and Rodney Fields and that line and those receivers, like, I didn't think that they were just like this close to having their act together. And then all of a sudden this was going to look like a competent football team with real talent. I don't know, this week, maybe there's talent there. There's talent. It's not what I turned my TV on and watched last year, where I felt like I was watching players who didn't deserve to be playing football at the level they were playing football. I feel like there is power for talent all over the field offensively. I felt like they were used incredibly poorly today. I felt like they played incredibly poorly today. They turned the ball over 4 times. They failed to convert on 4th down another 4 times. So if anyone out there is just asking me, hey, Colby, if you can take the worst performance possible against Tulsa and try to put a positive spin on it, that would be my positive spin, is that I think there is some talent that exists. And they played the worst football game they could possibly play. Maybe I think they're getting their doors blown off by Oregon next week. But then they play Murray State the next week. If they were to go on the road and beat West Virginia and be 2-2 going into the bye week, all of a sudden I think we'd be sitting here and saying, okay, maybe they win 7 games. Maybe we can feel good about ourselves at that point. Because at this point, I think getting to 7 would feel pretty good. So that would be my one glass half full spin that I would be willing to put on this thing, is I think that there is much more talent on that field offensively than what we saw a year ago.
Yeah. And I think right now we're in a show me state with Eric Morris. We're in a show me position. I put a lot of trust in his system, his quarterback, his schemes. I put a lot of trust in what I'd seen on tape with North Texas. And now he's got to show me before I'm going to have any shred of optimism moving forward. And there's going to be a lot to take away against Oregon. You're playing Oregon, like the old phrase of, like, so many times Oklahoma State played such a weak non-conference schedule, they were not prepared for Big 12 play, and they would lose their Big 12 opener. At one point, Mike Gundy had a losing record in Big 12 openers. I think that was part of why, is the level of competition was so low that the jump up, they weren't quite prepared for. My hope would be, however the Oregon game goes, that they see what a real national championship contender looks like and coach and play against. Maybe that could be some sort of springboard into going to West Virginia, where the competition level will drop down. But I don't know. I'm in a very much a show me position rather than a trust me position with Eric Morris, because a lot of that trust went out the window, I'm sure, for everybody watching, as far as how much of an offensive genius he and Brophy and Mestemaker are, because this was not a good advertisement for what Oklahoma State just paid for.
Carson, I don't know if you were curious, but I'll tell you anyway. Colorado State currently leads Wyoming 21-13 late in the third quarter. Why am I telling you that? Just thought everybody might like to know. Our old buddy Hoss Haney is 17 of 24 for 162, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. He's run the ball 3 times for 15 yards. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Hoss Haney having a nice day. We went and got us a new
missing toy. Link.
Yeah. He's
the missing link.
The missing link. That,
the reason they went, like, if they had Hoss Haney, they were going to do some things. That's all we kept hearing last year.
Hoss Haney quarterbacked the last win. He quarterbacked the last win. He started the game against UT Martin. He went out and scored 14 points the first 2 drives before his season ended with injury. We haven't won a game since. We've barely scored points since.
If this continues to go the way it's going, he might get in the Ring of Honor. If he's just going to be the last quarterback to win a game at Oklahoma State, we have to put him in the Ring of Honor. Hoss Haney is going to be up there with Thurman, Barry, you know, every Bob Fenimore, you name it, all the great names that eventually go up there, Hassani might have to join them.
somebody earlier asked a couple of times. I was trying to find it to put it on the screen, but there's a ton of comments. Asked if we're Kansas now. Carson, we spent a lot of time, and I mean the collective we, not even just you and me. Like, we spent a lot of time for 15 years, 10, 15 years, making fun of Kansas. They're a joke. They're a stain on the conference. Why do we have to even tolerate that Kansas exists and is part of the Big 12? They were the Big 12's Rutgers. Carson, I hope we're not, but 3-9, followed by 1-11, followed by opening your season with a bully beatdown. I mean, Tulsa's coach gets interviewed after the game and says, yeah, we could have beat them 37-10 if we would have played a clean game. We're talking about Oklahoma State playing a clean game. He's like, yeah, we play a clean game. We beat them by 4 touchdowns. Carson, are we the new Kansas? Are we the Big 12? Yeah, I mean,
Tulsa had 100 yards in penalties. Like, Trey Lamb is not wrong. Like, Tulsa really kept OSU in this game for all intents and purposes, frankly, which is even more embarrassing that that's the case. So, no, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say we're Kansas now, like, based on maybe the Turner Gill Kansas is what you're referencing. But we're definitely not the new Indiana. We're definitely not Kirk Cignetti coming in here and, you know, winning double-digit games in year one. That ain't happening. Everyone wanted to hope and pray that was the model, and that's the model Oklahoma State was following, and they tried, but, you know, the players didn't show up, the coaches didn't show up. It's not as easy as just paying guys to come in and hiring a new coaching staff. You got to have some semblance of continuity. You have to have some semblance of chemistry. And this team looked like a team that had never played a game together. And that's ultimately what we saw.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Carson, would you like to catch up with some more of our old friends? One of whom was never actually a Poke, but Alex Golish got plenty of interviews. Auburn won their season opener today at home against Baylor 17-16, despite a 0 touchdown, 3 interception performance from quarterback Byron Brown. But Carson, if you were curious how Gavin Freeman is doing as a Baylor Bear, he had 12 for 154 and a touchdown today. Just if we were curious whether Hoss Haney and Gavin Freeman would have been any fun last year. I don't know. Maybe. We'll never know. We'll never know. We'll never know if we ever get to have fun again, Carson.
Boy.
The offseason was fun. The games are no longer fun. But the offseason, boy, that was a blast. We sure won December. We sure won May. We sure won August. Not so much in September.
I will say it's been a disturbing trend of guys leaving Stillwater and getting a lot better.
Yeah.
Man, Dejon Stribling comes to mind. He's like getting taken in like the 7th round of fantasy drafts now. I know he got hurt when he was here. But think about this, Colby. 66 players transferred out of Oklahoma State this offseason. Only 25 of them landed at a Power 4 program. So that's a lot of dead weight that they got rid of and brought in supposedly, you know, better players. But, you know, certainly Freeman and Haney knew were good players. And I'm happy for those guys. Look, new coaching staff, NIL era, go get what you can get. I think we talked about that back then. No, I actually kind of I'll be pulling for those guys. Gavin Freeman's an Oklahoma kid. I remember him playing at Heritage Hall. So good for him. But I'm about tapped out. I don't know about you. If there's any more questions, fire them off. But my final thoughts are just about as bad of a debut as you could possibly have. Not only do you lose your first game as head coach, Eric Morris and Drew Mestemaker and all the stars that came in, but you do so to your in-state university in Tulsa, who's up the road, who you had more fans than in their own home stadium, and you still lose the game. It's a double whammy. And the days of winning Bedlam feel so long ago, light years ago. And I got to say, if Oklahoma came to Stillwater this year, that would look like it used to look like when there was a 20-something year losing streak to the Sooners, because those two programs have gone in very different directions since they left the SEC. So, again, I don't want to say the season's over and that they're not going to go to a bowl game, I think that would be, you know, recency bias. But for 1 week, OSU deserves to be at the bottom of every power poll. Everyone should be counting them out going against Oregon. And it's incumbent upon Eric Morris to earn his salary and Drew Mestemaker to make his, because there's going to be a lot of heat on those two guys this week and for the rest of the year, because this is not what Chad Weiberg and the boosters signed up for. And patience is thinner than it's ever been in college football. College football never had a lot of patience, but they just tapped out a lot of their patience in week one.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Carson, since we won the final bedlam, four wins since the final bedlam. We're still two wins away from bowl eligibility in the 25 games since the final bedlam. We might have sold our souls to win that game. Worth it? I don't know.
Damn squinky.
That was a fun night.
Squinky.
Yep.
We prayed to the squinky gods that we could win the last bedlam. And he said, okay, but here's what you get in return.
It's going to cost
four wins in about 4 years, three years.
I would be remiss
in terrible.
Our newest sponsor, Farm Service Company, is a real estate brokerage spanning three generations of Oklahoma State graduates in Chickasha, Oklahoma. They offer farm management for non-resident landowners, farm and ranch appraisal, and farm and ranch sales. Check out farmservicerealestate.com for more information. Love the good people in Chickasha, Oklahoma. Love all of our sponsors. I do need to go to Chris's and get me some more shirts for this fall. I mean, I'm fully prepared to go to all the games this year, Carson. I certainly hope it gets better. The Oregon game kicks at 11 next Saturday. I can look. I'm sure the high is going to be 100 degrees. I assume every day for the rest of our life, it's just going to be 100 degrees outside. Let's have a little look-see here. Next Saturday, Carson, the high is exactly 100 degrees. For an 11 o'clock kick, we will be frying in the West End Zone. I'm going to have to see something to make me watch two halves of football in person. There's a good chance I get a heavy dose of Dave, John, and Dion next Saturday. My overall thoughts are less about just today and more about what it means. And what it means is that you have a fan base who was so dejected after the last 24 months, after the last 24 games, really the last 21 games. You started 3-0 in 2024. The last 21 games, you were 1-20 coming into today. Just a dejected fan base, a fan base that allowed itself to believe all offseason that this program still had it, a right to belong in the Big 12 conversation, a right to go out and get the hot coaching hire, to bring in a ton of talent, and to go out and to steamroll Tulsa and to compete against Oregon, to be 2-1 going into conference play, to win 8 games, to win 10 games, 6, 7, 9, whatever number you want to throw out there. You had a fan base who was really, really excited for this season. I was hyped to go to these games. I've been telling my daughter all offseason, Bullitt's going to run a lot more this year. We'd have had to stick around a long time today in the heat to see him run once if that game would have been played at home. You've got an excited fan base that is now dejected. Dejected. You better do something. You better do something. Doesn't necessarily have to be next week. You better find a way to be 2-2 when you go into that bye in week 5. If you're 1-3 going into that bye, and the only team you've beaten is FCS Murray State, and back-to-back years, the only wins you can muster up are against FCS opponents. Carson, today really meant something for the belief of this fan base in this program. At some point, the checks stopped getting cut. At some point, it's a lot of money for the results that we're getting. At some point, the checks stopped getting cut. I feel dejected today. I feel beaten down. I'm sure I sound like it. These shows aren't fun to do. 1-21, Carson. 1-21 in the last 22 games. We've had to sit here and do these shows. Some of those in 2024 really hurt whenever we thought that team was going to be good. Today hurt just as much. Today really, really hurt. I'll be there next Saturday for at least a half. They're going to have to give me a reason to stick around to watch two of them in person.
Yeah, there's a lot on the line here. I don't mean to overstate things, but let's say this season plays out the way it looks like it will after week one. there's going to be real questions being asked of Chad Weiberg, from the boosters. Is he the person to lead this? Is Eric Morris the person to lead this? Where is this going to leave Oklahoma State in the hierarchy of conference realignment? There's a lot more at stake than just this 2026 football season, and that's scary. And so I would encourage everyone to go be loud this season, go be loud against Oregon, hopefully pull off a miracle there. But man, you're right. The excitement level had reached its zenith coming into this game. And now it feels like we're right back to square one, right back where we were when we ended this show after the last regular season game last year. And that's really disappointing. I'm disappointed for everyone who's taken the time to join us doing the show. But again, let's just hit pause. Let's all take a break. Let's all go spend time with our families. We'll reconvene on Thursday and preview the Oregon Duck game. Can we wear all white again and make Oregon wear black or dark green? Like, I would be very much in that heat proposing we wear our away uniforms. I'm trying to get you can already hear me, Cole. We're trying to get every advantage humanly possible because they're going to need it after what we saw against Tulsa. But everyone hit pause. We'll reconvene on Thursday and hopefully it looks a lot different. I think it will. I think it'll look a lot different offensively, a lot better. That doesn't mean they're going to beat Oregon by any means. Okay, but I do think this was a colossal flop for two reasons. Number one, Eric Morris was way overconfident. He said, I'm Eric Morris. I just lit everybody up at North Texas. I'm about to do the same thing to Tulsa. And he got a big old turd sandwich, a big old humble pie. And I think it came down to the money downs, the fourth downs. Again, the overconfidence plays into that too. You learn from that lesson and you figure out what the hell happened to your downfield plays, your explosive plays. This season's going to look much different than it did in week one. I do want to stress that before we sign off. It's not going to look like this the entire season. I can say that with confidence.
I was laughing at a comment that we just got. I'll put it on the screen. Guys, this won't happen, but imagine we beat Oregon. Okay, I'm imagining it. No, my brain short-circuited.
Be the biggest win maybe ever. I don't know if they've ever beaten the number two ranked team in the country. Bill Haston said they'd never beaten number one. But that would literally be the biggest win ever. Besides, winning a Big 12 championship.
That's not even worth discussing. I'll take Oregon minus the points. I have not seen the spread yet. I'll take Oregon minus the points.
Vegas knew something because you texted me before this game started that the line moved from 13.5 down to 11. So some big, sharp money knew this was going to go poorly for OSU. And credit to them because I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, boy, that's a bit jarring to see the line move multiple points Tulsa's direction hours before the game. It was a little shocking. The whole thing was a little shocking. Cannot express enough how much we appreciate everyone joining us. We've had more than 300 people in here. Most of this show, we got up to about 400. We love all of our listeners. We've gotten some good comments. These shows are tough, man. We make these predictions. We feel good. I was so excited to do the show this evening. Like, we were planning out early in the week, Sunday, our recording schedule, making sure we're going live right after the game. I was so excited to do this show and have to come on and do this show. It's a kick in the teeth, man. It's a kick in the teeth on their home field by Tulsa. It is what it is. Carson, we'll be back Thursday night. We'll figure out what Oklahoma State can do. I will have rewatched this game by then, so we'll have a bunch more Eric Morris quotes.
Bless your heart.
Yeah, we'll have some more Eric Morris quotes by then. So, it is what it is, man. Have a good week. We'll be back Thursday night.
Yeah, stand corrected. They beat Missouri when they were ranked number two. We can all admit Missouri was not the second best team in the country that year. Like, I know they were number two. It was like October, maybe September. Facts are facts. I stand corrected. Bad week for me. I've been wrong a lot this week. That's what the latest. Caleb Hawkins. I'm gonna do that. What that guy in the comments told me to do, put a sticky note up on my computer. I'm gonna write Caleb Hawkins on this computer screen so I don't screw that up anymore. So I will correct my 8-10 plays. I hope Oklahoma State fixed their 8-10 fourth down plays. And hopefully we're talking about a much better season moving forward. But that's probably not going to happen next week. But we got a lot to talk about with the Oregon game on Thursday. Colby, enjoyed it. We'll talk to you then.
Absolutely. Very quickly, two more YouTube comments on the way out. The scary thing is, can the line really look a whole lot better? Theoretically, yes. I mean, nobody else practiced at left tackle. Like, that was just Jacob Sexton's job. So theoretically, yes, they could with a shuffling.
Play calling could help.
Better. The play calling can help. Like, theoretically, yes. I'm not predicting that, but theoretically, sure, it could. And then Zach Gray, did they call the same play on all the fourth downs except for the pass one? Yes, Zach. Yes, they did. I'll make sure on my rewatch, but yes, certainly seemed like they did. So
Running into the center's backside was the play call.
Yeah, that was the play call. All right, great stuff. Carson, appreciate everyone being with us tonight. We will be back Thursday with so many more thoughts about this game, about all the quotes, and previewing the big matchup against the Oregon Ducks. It was a tough one today, but as always, go Pokes!